Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. We begin today with a conversation about stress. It's part and parcel of all of our lives. And while the downside effects of stress are readily apparent, worry and anxiety, insomnia, etc., is there an upside to stress? Well, Dr. Lee Vanocur thinks that by reframing what stress is and managing it correctly, we can turn stress into a force for good. Dr. Lee knows a thing or two about stress. She's an emergency room physician and a TV commentator, and she's worked as an advisor in the corporate and healthcare sectors as well. And in her new book, she offers tips on how to respond to stress and how to make stress a catalyst for positive change. It's called Never Let Them See You Sweat: How Science Can Help Us Harness Stress for Success. And Dr. Lee will be speaking about her book tonight at the Ivy Bookshop, and we spoke about it yesterday. Dr. Lee, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So let's start first with the physiology and the psychology of stress, because stress is a physiological phenomenon as well as a mental phenomenon. So what happens when we get stressed physiologically?
Well, and it is, and it's an adaptive physiology that actually maybe saved us evolutionarily, right? So, you know, back in the day, being chased by a predator, you needed this response from the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So all of a sudden, an area in your brain called the amygdala will tell you it's heightened for fear, and it'll tell you, something's chasing me. So what happens then is through this catalyst of hormones coming out, we release adrenaline, we release cortisol. It dilates your eyes so you have better peripheral vision. It gets your heart pumping faster. It shuts off our digestion. It activates what's called the sympathetic nervous system, which is this cascade, turning off the parasympathetic, which is the rest and digest. So all the blood gets diverted to your muscles and you can take off. So it really helped save us. The problem is chronic stress. If you're an accountant sitting at a desk all day and you have chronic stress, that's when it wears the body down.
Because that's a different kind of stress, isn't it? I mean, it's one thing to be being chased by a dinosaur, and it's another thing to be, you know, just piled up with too much to do and not enough time to finish.
Yes, but what's interesting, Tom, is our amygdala, that area in our brain that senses fear and threat, it doesn't know the difference of when we're thinking and there's a real stress about something or when we really are stressed because of life-threatening situations. So that's the problem. And if you have this chronic cortisol, it does a cascade, a whole host of things. It increases our inflammation, which we know can contribute to diabetes and maybe even cancer. It's a dysfunction of our immune system. You know, it can trigger arrhythmias. So this chronic low level of cortisol constantly puts wear and tear on your body and then can lead to anxiety and depression.
It also produces adrenaline, right?
Right.
When this happens, is adrenaline in and of itself, can that be a harmful thing?
A constant level of adrenaline. But, you know, I talk about, too, in the book, the myth that all stress is bad. It isn't really. I mean, think about an Olympic runner. The Olympics are coming, you know, it's winter, but it doesn't matter, you know, a skier in waiting to go off or a runner in the blocks. You need that stress. Even as an ER doctor, we get a call, there's a mass casualty or there's an accident coming in, we're all in the resuscitation room. You need that little burst of adrenaline to go and perform at top level. But if you don't have the recovery in between and you have this subsisting high levels of adrenaline, high levels of cortisol, can trigger arrhythmias, cause high blood pressure, you know, lead to diabetes, all kinds of things.
Talk about the endocannabinoid system.
Right.
We hear cannabinoid and we think of cannabis, which you also happen to be an expert in. You hold a secondary degree in using it for medical purposes. But what's the endocannabinoid system?
Well, actually, that's one of our, and it's so funny, it's so ingrained into our evolution that even sea squirts, anything with a nervous system, has cannabinoid receptors, and we have our own internal cannabis molecules. And what that does is it helps regulate our stress. We have it in the central nervous system. We have it in our immune system. So for example, we know, say something like a seizure where in the brain it just keeps firing and there's no control. Sometimes our internal cannabinoids are released at the opposite end of the way the nerves flow, and it puts out this chemical, which is our own endocannabinoid. One's called anandamide that was discovered in the 80s and 90s by Dr. Mashulam, the father of modern cannabis. He called it anandamide because ananda is the Sanskrit word for bliss, and it's our own bliss molecule. So it helps temper our nervous system. It affects every other system in our body. So it is one of these evolutionary stress regulators that we have, and we've just been learning about it pretty much since the 80s and 90s and how important it is. We know that kids with autism, there were several studies done, kids with autism, they have lower levels of this anandamide, you know, and then they have all these other types of behaviors, stimming and flapping and all these things. And that's why they sometimes respond to cannabis. So the plant cannabinoids can affect our internal cannabinoid receptors. And there is this belief that certain hard to treat conditions that we don't have good medications, like autism, drug resistant seizures, might in fact be a dysregulation of our endocannabinoids system.
Dr. Lee Vanocur is my guest. We're talking about her latest book, Never Let Them See You Sweat, How Science Can Help Us Harness Stress for Success. So let's talk about the psychological side of this. It affects physiologically how we react, how our muscles respond, where the blood's going, etc. Do we think differently under stress? I mean, one would assume that that's an easy yes. What's the effect of that?
Well, the effect is it definitely affects cognition. It is hard to think straight when you're under this constant stress. And it affects things like serotonin release in the brain too, right? And we have a lot of serotonin in our gut too. So it affects that dysregulation. And we know serotonin is one of those molecules, you know, the drugs to treat depression and anxiety, SSRIs, serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So selective is the first S. So truthfully, it does upset that balance, and it can lead to the chronic stress, can lead to anxiety, which can lead to depression. So that's part of the problem with it.
One of the things that you say in the book is that sometimes the best cure for stress is to put a situation in perspective. That surprised me because I thought, well, can you really kind of think your way out of stress? That's a tall order, isn't it?
It is, and sometimes it's hard to do. But as I said, the amygdala doesn't understand that you're ruminating about the cost of something you bought that you don't need, and you might have buyer's remorse from it. And you're worrying about that constantly. That part of your brain that detects threats, it doesn't realize this is a threat that maybe you can do something about. This is something of your own doing. And so you really, there's a lot of hard work that you have to do to be able to cognate out of stress. And I'm not downplaying. In the book, I talk about when it's too much and when you might need professional help, which is serious, and there's nothing wrong with it. But there are methods to deal with your stress. One of the things I talk about is trying to triage your stress. And that also puts things in perspective.
Yeah, you talk about perfectionism as being a big cause of psychological stress. And gratitude can be an antidote as well.
Yes, exactly.
That seems like such a simple notion,
it does.
It
seems like simple. And, you know, throughout the book, I give my own examples in my life when I've realized how ridiculous some of my worries are, and how there should be gratitude related to it. And I admit it is hard to, like, when you're in that situation, to see out of it. But there are techniques that are science-backed. I have hundreds of articles that I reference in the book. And, like, for example, when I talk about triaging stress, right? So It's almost this idea, like as an ER doctor with mass casualties, you know, sometimes you come upon patients and we triage or sort them for how serious they are and how ill they are. And there are some patients that have minor injuries, they're hurt, but they're going to survive no matter what. So if we're at a big mass casualty, which unfortunately we do see today in America, you need to let those patients go. And then there are some patients you come to them and you know they are so seriously injured, it doesn't matter. We don't have an intervention that's going to save them, and you have to let them go. It's the patients in the middle that you know if you get a quick intervention, put on a tourniquet, get them to the hospital, get them into surgery, you can make a difference and they can survive. And that's how we have to sort of look at stress. You know, the guy that's cutting you off on the highway, is it going to really change your life if you chase him down? In fact, it could end your life in some places, right? Or the things that you have no control over, which unfortunately we are feeling today a lot of times in this situation. I'm not saying to be apathetic and give up, but you have to separate that from the things you have control of that you know will affect your life that you can try and focus and deal with.
Is it a matter of also aligning or examining your values? I mean, when you talk about perfectionism, if you're one of those people that wants to get it right, you know, I guess sometimes people refer to it as a type A personality. If you're, you know, and you're raising your hand, and I could raise mine as well. But that whole notion of perfectionism, is it a matter of, you know, the best way to reduce stress is to lower your standards? Because, you know, that's maybe not the ideal solution, is it?
No, but it's not really lowering your standards. It's just not holding yourself, you usually do it to yourself, to these ridiculous standards. So in the book, I talk about a Harvard a Business Review article that says men will apply for a job or a promotion if they feel 60% qualified, but women will only do it if they feel 100% qualified, right? Who's 100% qualified? I mean, it not only says something about men's confidence versus women's confidence. I get we don't want to overpromise and underperform, but it also says a lot about what kind of standards are we holding ourselves to? And that's what I wanted people to get out of the book. Life is messy. Nothing's perfect in life. You're just human, and you need to learn how to forgive yourself, okay? That's the first thing. Having gratitude is one thing, but then having forgiveness for yourself and not holding yourself to those standards.
The book and the tips that you have for harnessing success cross over genders. They're good tips for men and women, but you do talk about some of the things in particular that relate to women, specifically motherhood being one of them. Motherhood is stressful. I suppose you could make the argument that fatherhood is equally stressful if you're, you know, in a relationship where the two of you are, you know, sharing the rearing of a child. But when it comes to motherhood, because you've got hormones, especially as the after you've given birth, you know, right after that, the newborn is there, and you know, the kid has his or her home hormones, and you got your hormones to deal with too. I mean, it's all very complex, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, you know, nobody does it perfect. Nobody does it right. You know, you think you're doing the right thing. You read about one thing, you read about another thing. And it's hard, you know. It's hard for men and it's hard for women, but you're right. Mothers sometimes
you're sleep deprived under any either circumstance.
Yes, that's true. You both can be sleep deprived. And sleep is critical for helping lower your stress or perpetuating high levels of you know, cortisol. But it's this idea that, you know, you have to try and let some things go without, you know, obviously having something dangerous go on with your child. And, you know, you do the best that you can, and you really have to forgive yourself sometimes.
Dr. Lee, her book is called Never Let Them See You Sweat: How Science Can Help Us Harness Stress for Success. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Our conversation was pre-recorded, so we can't take any calls or comments today. So, Dr. Lee, I was really taken with what you call vanity's little secret. Sprucing yourself up from time to time doesn't hurt when it comes to addressing stress.
Yeah, you know, it's this idea, and there was a study out of Yale, there is such a thing as a bad hair day, that it's this idea that if you feel, like I'm not telling women or anyone to meet the standards of a celebrity or everything on social media, which really increases stress today, because those are people's best days. Those are touched up pictures. Those are all of those things. So it's not meeting those standards, but doing the things for yourself. Self-care is not selfish, okay? Self-care is kind of critical. It helps you feel better about yourself when you have more self-esteem and confidence. You can carry on with your day. Your relationships are better. And like I said, that bad hair day study said both men and women, when they felt that they didn't look as good and their hair looked bad, they performed worse on tests that they were given than when they felt their hair looked good. They felt that they looked good. So I am all about tweaks here, there, little Botox, little filler, whatever it is that makes you feel good for you. Don't go to a plastic surgeon and say, make me look like Kim Kardashian. That's not healthy. But go and say, you know, I want to look the best that I can look. And I think a good plastic surgeon would temper that and tell you that.
But that, I mean, you could also, you know, do retail therapy that people talk about, you know, go buy stuff. I mean, but some of this can get out of hand pretty easily.
Exactly. And I talk about the good things that you can do for yourself and also some of the dangerous things, like taking the edge off with alcohol all the time or too much retail therapy, you know, because if you are putting yourself in debt, financial debt is a huge stress for people, right? And then there's that buyer's remorse. Maybe you feel good with the retail therapy when you first do it. Then you get home. And I know what that feels like. Then you get home and you're like, look in your closet and really another pair of black boots, right? That's what I needed. So those kind of things over time can actually increase your stress. So you know, I tell people sometimes just window shopping makes you feel good. So
when you have your chapter about the actual tips to harness the stress, the very first thing you say is find a female doctor. Now, you, of course, are a female doctor, but I know a bunch of male doctors that would beg to differ. There is some data, however, about women patients relating to women doctors. There's also racial data about African-American patients relating to African-American doctors and stuff. Talk about that data and why you think, you know, there's an advantage, especially for women, to have female physicians in their life.
Well, for women, I do think and I do believe in having diversity in medicine. I know sometimes it's a little bit of a dirty word today, but diversity in medicine so that you can relate and patients do better. But I have to
tell you, there are more women in medical school these days than men.
There
too,
are. Should, yeah. But I talk about there may be more than 50% of the class women today. But if you look at the CEOs or the head of the academic departments, it's down to 15%. So there is those sticky floors and glass ceilings. But there is data in general that look at patients, both men and women, that often women doctors, women surgeons have less infection rates, lower complication rates. Women physicians have less readmission from the hospital once they've admitted them, treating them. There's data that says they follow guidelines.
For both male and female patients.
Right, yeah. For both. So there is. You know, we maybe like to follow the rules, follow the medical guidelines. We like to take a little more time listening, you know, and being active listeners and such. And that's some of what's come out of the research. But there is research that female doctors' outcome studies that they do have better outcomes with any kind of patient.
And when it comes to, you know, relieving stress, confronting stress, dealing with it, some of the suggestions you have are things that we've heard before, but the way you frame it, I think, is interesting. One of the ways you say it is stress and music do not mix, right? So if you're listening to music, you got some good tunes going on, it's going to be harder to stay stressed out.
Humming, even something as simple as humming. And a colleague of mine, when I was on faculty at the University of Maryland, Dr. Miller, he did studies with ultrasound and showed when you listen to music that you love, whatever it is, it dilates your blood vessels. And so you have more blood flow to your brain, to your heart, to places. So, yeah.
You know, and also you talk about sleep. We mentioned this just a minute ago. Sleep is really important. But of course, when you're stressed out, sometimes it's hard to get to sleep or to stay asleep. You wake up fretting. How do you reconcile that?
So besides good sleep hygiene, keeping it cold in the bedroom, really blackout shades or wear one of those little masks. I know they seem funny, but they really can help even for little bits of ambient light. The screen time is critical, really, you know, shutting that down an hour before. Although it's interesting, a new study came out. It says if your brain and your amygdala watches a TV show that you've seen before, they're like, oh, I know this. I know this, how it ends. It can calm you down and lower that sympathetic response. So that's part of it, too. But I say if you're fretting a lot about what you have to do tomorrow and all these things, write it down. It's almost like journaling in a sense. If you write down everything you have to do tomorrow, it sort of takes it out of your brain, puts it onto a piece of paper, and that can help you get to sleep without thinking, oh, my God, I need to do this and that. So really take some time before you go to bed and say, what's my day going to look like tomorrow, and write everything down. Or journal, writing some gratitude, what was good during the day, things like that.
And, of course, on the other end of the spectrum, a good healthy workout will also help you a lot. Exercise really does impact stress levels.
Oh, yeah. I mean, exercise affects cognition and dementia as we age. It isn't just the physical aspects of improving your cardiac output and your heart and everything. It really helps the mind, too. It really helps that hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal axis shut down. So, and by the way, talking about endocannabinoids, they used to say that runner's high was endorphins. Now we believe it's from endocannabinoids, that runner's high.
And you also do talk about when things get to the point where you really need professional help. You talk about patients who come in complaining of aches and pains, but what they're really what their issue is regulating their mood. How do you know? What are the telltale signs when you've crossed on over?
Well, if you're really trying hard and you've done all these things like the meditation, the mindfulness, and you really are feeling like it's getting to be too much, you feel hopeless, you feel like your family would be better off without you, those are red flags that you need to talk to somebody right away. You know, doctors need to ask you about suicide. I think now primary cares are doing screenings about depressions. And I just wanted people to know, you know, this book isn't about white knuckling it and managing through stress and pulling yourself up by the bootstraps. Sometimes you need professional help. And just the way if you went to the doctor and they said, oh, we're going to operate tomorrow and you'd be for a condition. Wait a minute, shouldn't we try medication first? I believe in that type of thing. You always start with the least invasive type of stuff. Sometimes the talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, can help switch your mind off and use cognition for that. And then work your way up to medications, procedures, like there's intracranial magnetic stimulation, all the way I discuss, you know, electroshock therapy, which doesn't look like the way it looked on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest anymore. But it's always start with the least invasive and go up. But you shouldn't feel ashamed to ask for help.
Well, there's plenty more to be had in this very interesting take on, making stress something that you can turn into a positive. So thanks, Dr. Lee. I appreciate it. It's always good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Lee Vanocur, her new book is called Never Let 'Em See You Sweat, How Science Can Help Us Harness Stress for Success. Dr. Lee will be speaking about the book tonight at the Ivy Bookshop. She'll be in conversation with Sloan Brown of the Baltimore Sun and the Daily Record. That event begins tonight at 6 o'clock. And up next, Jonathan Hayward is coming here. He's the music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. We'll talk about the future of the BSO and in particular, his future with our beloved orchestra. He joins me on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.